to get stranded. Sadie and I had experienced that once before, and it hadn't been fun. As the sunboat drifted toward the shore, Bess gave us a lopsided grin.
"Ready, kids? I got a feeling things up in the mortal world aren't going to be pretty."
That was the first unsurprising thing I'd heard all day. The glowing lights extended the boat's gangplank, and we climbed aboard for what might be the last sunrise in history.
17. Brooklyn House Goes to War. I was sorry to leave the land of demons.
Yes, Carter, I'm quite serious.
After all, I'd had a rather successful visit there. I'd saved Zia and my brother from that horrid ghost Setna. I'd captured the Serpent's Shadow. I'd witnessed the charge of the Old Folks Brigade in all its glory. And most of all, I'd been reunited with Bess. Why wouldn't I have fond memories of the place? I might even take a beach holiday there someday. Rent a cabana on the Sea of Chaos. Why not? The flurry of activity also distracted me from less pleasant thoughts, but once we arrived at the riverbank and I had a few moments to breathe, I started thinking about how I'd learned the spell to rescue Bess's shadow. My elation turned to despair. Walt, oh, Walt, what had he done? I remembered how lifeless and cold he'd been, cradled in my arms amid the mud-brick ruins. Then suddenly he had opened his eyes and gasped. "Look," he'd said to me. On the surface, I'd seen Walt as I'd always known him, but in the Duat, the boy god Anubis shimmered, his ghost-grey aura sustaining Walt's life. "Still me," they had said in unison. Their double voice had made my skin tingle. "I'll meet you at sunrise," they had promised, "at the first gnome, if you're sure you don't hate me." Did I hate him? Or was it them? Gods of Egypt, I wasn't even sure what to call him anymore. I certainly didn't know how I felt, or if I wanted to see him again. I tried to put those thoughts aside. We still needed to defeat Apophis. Even with his captured shadow, there was no guarantee we would succeed in casting the spell. I doubted Apophis would stand idly by while we tried to obliterate him from the universe, and it was entirely possible that the execration would require more magic than Carter and I had combined. If we burned up, my dilemma with Walt would hardly be a problem. Nevertheless, I couldn't stop thinking about him, them, the way their warm brown eyes merged together so perfectly, and how natural Anubis's smile looked on Walt's face. Gah! This was not helpful. We climbed aboard the Sunbark, Carter, Zia, Bess, and me. I was relieved beyond words that my favourite dwarf would be accompanying us to our final battle. I needed a reliably ugly god in my life right now. At the bow, our old enemy Sobek regarded me with a crocodile smile, which I suppose was the only kind of smile he had.
"So, the little Cain children have returned."
"So," I snapped, "the crocodile god wants his teeth kicked in." Sobek threw back his scaly green head and laughed.
"Well said, girl. You have iron in your bones."
I suppose that was meant as a compliment. I chose to sneer at him and turn away. Sobek only respected strength. In our first encounter, he had drowned Carter in the Rio Grande and smacked me across the Texas-Mexico border. We hadn't got much chummier since. From what I'd heard, he had only agreed to join our side because Horus and Isis had threatened him with extreme bodily harm. That didn't say much about his loyalty. The glowing crew orbs fluttered around me, humming in my mind, little happy greetings of
Sadie, Sadie, Sadie.
Once upon a time, they had also wanted to kill me, but since I'd awakened their old master Ra, they'd become quite friendly. "Yes, hello, boys," I muttered. "Lovely to see you. Excuse me." I followed Carter and Zia to the fiery throne. Ra gave us a toothless grin. He was still as old and wrinkly as ever, but something seemed different about his eyes. Before, his gaze had always slid over me, as if I were part of the scenery. Now, he actually focused on my face. He held out a plate of macaroons and chocolate biscuits, which were a bit melted from the heat of his throne. cookies? Whee! Thanks. Carter took a macaroon. Naturally, I opted for the chocolate. I hadn't eaten a proper meal since we'd left our father's court. Ra set down the platter and wobbled to his feet. Bess tried to help, but Ra waved him off. He tottered towards Zia. Zia, he warbled happily, as if singing a nursery rhyme. Zia, Zia, Zia. With a jolt, I realized it was the first time I'd heard him use her actual name. He reached out to touch her scarab amulet. Zia backed away nervously. She glanced at Carter for reassurance. It's okay, Carter promised. She took a deep breath. She unclasped her necklace and pressed it into the old man's hands. A warm glow expanded from the scarab, enveloping both Zia and Ra in a brilliant golden light. Good, good, Ra said. Good. I expected the old god to get better. Instead, he began to crumble. It was one of the most alarming things I'd seen in a very alarming day. First his ears fell off and melted to dust, then his skin started turning to sand. What's happening? I cried. Shouldn't we do something? Carter's eyes widened with horror. His mouth opened, but no words came out. Ra's smiling face dissolved. His arms and legs cracked apart like a desiccated sand sculpture, his particles scattered across the river of night. Bess grunted.
That was fast.
He didn't seem particularly shocked.
Usually it takes longer.
I stared at him. You've seen this before? Bess gave me a crooked grin.
Hey, I took my turns working on the sunbark in the old days. We've all seen Ra go through his cycle, but it's been a long, long time. Look!
He pointed at Zia. The scarab had disappeared from her hands, but golden light still radiated around her like a full-body halo. She turned toward me with a brilliant smile. I'd never seen her so at ease, so pleased.
I see now.
Her voice was much richer, a chorus of tones descending in octaves through the duet.
It's all about balance, isn't it? My thoughts and his, or is it mine and hers?
She laughed like a child on her first bike ride.
Rebirth at last! You were right, Zadie and Carter. After so many eons in the darkness, I am finally reborn through Zia's compassion. I'd forgot what it is like to be young and powerful.
Carter stepped back. I couldn't blame him. The memory of Walt and Anubis merging was still fresh in my mind, so I had a sense what Carter was feeling. It was more than a little creepy hearing Zia describe herself in the third person. I lowered my vision deeper into the duat. In Zia's place stood a tall man in leather and bronze armor. In some ways, he still looked like Ra. He was still bald, his face was still wrinkled and weathered with age, and he had the same kindly smile, only with teeth. Now, though, his posture was straight, his body rippled with muscles, his skin glowed like molten gold. He was the world's buffest, most golden grandpa. Bess knelt.
My Lord Ra. Ah, my small friend.
Ra ruffled the dwarf god's hair.
Rise. It's good to see you.
At the bow, Sobek came to attention, holding his long iron staff like a rifle.
Lord Ra, I knew you would return.
Ra chuckled.
Sobek, you old reptile, you would snap me up for dinner if you thought you could get away with it. Horus and Isis kept you in line.
Sobek cleared his throat.
As you say, my king.
He shrugged.
I can't help my nature. No matter, Ra said. We'll need your strength soon enough. Are we approaching sunrise? Yes, my king.
Sobek pointed ahead of us. I saw light at the end of the tunnel, literally. As we neared the end of the duat, the river of night widened. The exit gate stood about a kilometer ahead, flanked by statues of the sun god. Past that, daylight glowed. The river turned to clouds and poured into the morning sky.
Very good, Ra said. Steer us to Giza, Lord Sobek. Yes, my king.
The croc god thrust his iron staff into the water, poling us along like a gondolier. Carter still hadn't moved. The poor boy stared at the sun god with a mixture of fascination and shock.
"Carter Kane," Ra said with affection, "I know this is difficult for you, but Zia cares for you greatly. Nothing about her feelings has changed."
I coughed. Request? Please don't kiss him." Ra laughed. His image rippled, and I saw Zia in front of me again.
"It's all right, Sadie," she promised. "Now would not be the time."
Carter turned awkwardly. I'll just be over there." He bumped into the mast, then staggered toward the stern of the boat. Zia knit her brow in concern.
"Sadie, go take care of him, will you? We'll be reaching the mortal world soon. I must stay vigilant."
For once, I didn't argue. I went to check on my brother. He was sitting by the tiller in crash position, his head between his knees. "All right?" I asked. Stupid question, I know.
"She's an old man,"
he muttered.
"The girl I like is a buff old man with a voice deeper than mine. I kissed her on the beach, and now..."
I sat next to him. The glowing orbs fluttered around us in excitement as the ship approached the daylight.
"Kissed her, eh?"
I said. "Details, please." I thought he might feel better if I could get him talking. I'm not sure if it worked, but at least it got his head out from between his knees. He told me about his journey with Zia through the Serapeum and the destruction of the Egyptian queen. Zia, stood at the bow between Sobek and Bess, very carefully not looking back at us.
"So you told her it was all right?"
I summed up. "You encouraged her to help Ra, and now you're having second thoughts."
"Do you blame me?"
he asked. "We've both hosted gods ourselves," I said. "It doesn't have to be permanent, and she's still Zia. Besides, we're heading into battle. If we don't survive, do you want to spend your last few hours pushing her away?" He studied my expression.
"What happened to Walt?"
"Ah, touché. At times it seemed that Carter knew my secret name as well as I knew his. I don't know exactly. He's alive, but only because..."
"He's hosting Anubis,"
Carter finished.
"You knew?"
He shook his head.
"Not until I saw that look on your face. But it makes sense. Walt has a knack for... whatever it is. That grey obliteration touch. Death magic."
I couldn't answer. I'd come back here to comfort Carter and reassure him that everything would be all right. Now, somehow, he'd managed to turn the tables. He put his hand briefly on my knee.
"This could work, sis. Anubis can keep Walt alive. Walt could live a normal life."
"You call that normal?"
"Anubis has never had a human host. This is his chance to have an actual body, to be flesh and blood." I shivered.
"Carter, it isn't like Zia's situation. She can separate at any time."
"So let me get this straight," Carter said. "The two guys you liked, one who was dying and one who was off-limits because he's a god, are now one guy who isn't dying and isn't off-limits, and you're complaining."
"Don't make me sound ridiculous," I shouted. "I'm not ridiculous." The three gods looked back at me. "All right, fine. I did sound ridiculous."
"Look,"
Carter said, "let's agree to freak out about this later, okay? Assuming we don't die." I took a shaky breath.
"Deal."
I helped my brother up. Together we joined the gods at the bow as the sunboat emerged from the Duat. The river of night disappeared behind us, and we sailed across the clouds. The Egyptian landscape spread out red and gold and green in the dawn. To the west, sandstorms swirled across the desert. To the east, the Nile snaked its way through Cairo. Directly below us, at the edge of the city, three pyramids rose on the plains of Giza. Sobek struck his staff against the bow of the ship. He shouted like a herald,
"At last, Ra has truly returned. Let his people rejoice. Let his throngs of worshippers assemble."
Perhaps Sobek said that as a formality, or to suck up to Ra, or possibly just to make the old sun god feel worse. Whatever the case, nobody down below was assembling. Definitely nobody was rejoicing. I'd seen this vista many times, but something was wrong. Fires burned across the city. The streets seemed strangely deserted. There were no tourists, no humans at all around the pyramids. I'd never seen Giza so empty. "Where is everyone?" I asked. Sobek hissed in disgust.
"I should have known. The weak humans are in hiding, or scared away because of the unrest in Egypt. Apophis has planned this well. His chosen battleground will be clear of mortal annoyances."
I shivered. I'd heard about the troubles in Egypt lately, along with all the strange natural disasters, but I hadn't thought of it as part of Apophis's plan. If this was his chosen battleground... I focused more closely on the plains of Giza. Peering into the Duat, I realized the area wasn't empty after all. Encircling the base of the Great Pyramid was an enormous serpent formed from a swirling tornado of red sand and darkness. His eyes were burning points of light. His fangs were forks of lightning. Wherever he touched, the desert boiled and the pyramid itself shook with a horrible resonance. One of the oldest structures in human history was about to crumble. Even from high above, I could feel the presence of Apophis. He radiated panic and fear so strongly I could sense the mortals across Cairo cowering in their homes, afraid to go out. The whole land of Egypt was holding its breath. As we watched, Apophis reared his massive cobra head. He struck at the desert floor, biting a house-sized crater in the sand. Then he recoiled as if he'd been stung and hissed with anger. At first, I couldn't tell what he was fighting. I called on Isis's bird of prey sight and spotted a small, lithe figure in a leopard-skin leotard, knives flashing in both hands as she leapt with inhuman agility and speed, striking at the serpent and evading his bite. All by herself, Bast was holding Apophis at bay. My mouth tasted like old pennies. "She's alone. Where are the others?"
"They await the Pharaoh's orders," Ra said. "Chaos has left them divided and confused. They will not march to battle without a leader."
"Then lead them," I demanded. The sun god turned. His form shimmered, and for a moment I saw Zia in front of me instead. I wondered if she would blast me to cinders. I had a feeling that would be quite easy for her now.
"I will face my old enemy," she said calmly, still with Ra's voice. "I won't let my loyal cat fight alone. Sobek, Bess, attend me." "Yes, my king," Sobek said.
Bess cracked his knuckles. His chauffeur's outfit vanished, replaced by only his dwarf pride speedo.
"Chaos, get ready to meet Ugly."
"Wait," Carter said. "What about us? We've got the serpent's shadow." The ship was descending rapidly now, coming in for a landing just south of the pyramids.
"First things first, Carter."
Zia pointed to the Great Sphinx, which stood about 300 meters from the pyramids.
"You and Sadie must help your uncle."
Between the Sphinx's paws, a trail of smoke rose from a tunnel entrance. My heart missed a beat. Zia had once told us how that tunnel was sealed to keep archaeologists from finding their way into the first gnome. Obviously, the tunnel had been forced open.
"The first gnome is about to fall,"
Zia said. Her form shifted again, and it was the sun god standing before me. I really wished he, she, they would make up their mind.
"I will hold off Apophis as long as I can," Ra said. "But if you don't help your uncle and your friends immediately, there will be no one left to save. The House of Life will crumble."
I thought about poor Amos and our young initiates, surrounded by a mob of rebel magicians. We couldn't let them be slaughtered. "She's right," I said. "He's right, whichever." Carter nodded reluctantly.
"You'll need these, Lord Ra."
He offered the sun god the crook and flail, but Ra shook his head, or Zia shook her head. Gods of Egypt, this is confusing.
"When I told you the gods waited for their pharaoh," Ra said, "I meant you, Carter Kane, the Eye of Horus. I am here to fight my old enemy, not to assume the throne. That is your destiny. Unite the House of Life, rally the gods in my name. Never fear, I will hold Apophis until you come."
Carter stared at the crook and flail in his hands. He looked every bit as terrified as he had when Ra had crumbled to sand. I couldn't blame him. Carter had just been ordered to assume the throne of creation and lead an army of magicians and gods into battle. A year ago, even 6 months ago, the idea of my brothers being given that kind of responsibility would have horrified me as well. Strangely, I didn't mind it now. Thinking of Carter as the Pharaoh was actually comforting. I'm sure I'll regret saying this, and I'm sure Carter will never let me forget it, but the truth was I'd been relying on my brother ever since we'd moved to Brooklyn House. I'd come to depend on his strength. I trusted him to make the right decisions, even when he didn't trust himself. When I had learned his secret name, I'd seen one very clear trait woven into his character, leadership. "You're ready," I told him.
"Indeed," Ra agreed.
Carter looked up, a bit stunned, but I suppose he could tell I wasn't teasing him, not this time. Bess punched him in the shoulder.
"Course you're ready, kid. Now stop wasting time and go save your uncle."
Looking at Bess, I tried not to get teary-eyed. I'd already lost him once. As for Ra, he seemed so confident, but still he was confined to the form of Zia Rashid. She was a strong magician, yes, but she was new to this hosting business. If she wavered even slightly or overextended herself...
"Good luck, then," Carter swallowed. "I hope..." He faltered.
I realized the poor boy was trying to say goodbye to his girlfriend, possibly for the last time, and he couldn't even kiss her without kissing the sun god... Carter began to change shape. His clothes, his pack, even the crook and flail melted into plumage. His form shrank until he was a brown and white falcon. Then he spread his wings and dove off the side of the boat. "Oh, I hate this part," I muttered. I called on Isis and invited her in. "Now, it's time to act as one." Immediately, her magic flowed into me. It felt as if someone had switched on enough hydroelectric generators to light up a nation and channeled all that power straight into me. I turned into a kite, the bird, and soared into the air. For once, I had no problem turning back to human. Carter and I rendezvoused at the feet of the Great Sphinx and studied the newly blasted tunnel entrance. The rebels hadn't been too subtle. Stone blocks the size of cars had been reduced to rubble. The surrounding sand had blackened and melted to glass. Either Sarah Jacoby's crew had used a hardy spell or several sticks of dynamite. "This tunnel," I said, "doesn't the other end open just across from the Hall of Ages?" Carter nodded grimly. He pulled out the crook and flail, which were now glowing with ghostly white fire. He plunged into the darkness. I summoned my staff and wand and followed him inside. As we descended, we saw evidence of battle. Explosions had scorched the walls and steps. One portion of the ceiling had buckled. Carter was able to clear a path with the strength of Horus, but as soon as we were through, the tunnel collapsed behind us. We wouldn't be exiting that way. Below us, I heard the sounds of combat, divine words being cast, fire, water, and earth magic clashing. A lion roared, metal clanged on metal. A few meters farther, and we found the first casualty. A young man in a tattered grey military uniform was propped against the wall, holding his stomach and wheezing painfully. "Leonid!" I cried. My Russian friend was pale and bloody. I put my hand on his forehead. His skin was cold.
"Below," he gasped. "Too many. I try.
Stay here," I said, which I realized was silly since he could hardly move. "We'll be back with help." He nodded bravely, but I looked at Carter and knew we were thinking the same thing. Leonid might not last that long. His uniform coat was soaked with blood. He kept his hand over his gut, but he'd clearly been savaged, either by claws or knives or some equally horrible magic. I cast a slow spell on Leonid, which would at least steady his breathing and stem the flow of blood, but it wouldn't help much. The poor boy had risked his life to escape St. Petersburg. He'd come all the way to Brooklyn to warn me about the impending attack. Now he'd tried to defend the first gnome against his former masters, and they'd cut him down and walked right over him, leaving him to suffer a lingering death. We will be back, I promised again. Carter and I stumbled on. We reached the bottom of the steps and were instantly thrown into battle. A Shapti lion leapt at my face. Isis reacted faster than I could have. She gave me a single word to speak. Fa! And the hieroglyph for release shimmered in the air. The lion shrank to a wax statuette and bounced harmlessly off my chest. All around us, the corridor was in mayhem. In either direction, our initiates were locked in combat with enemy magicians. Directly in front of us, a dozen rebels had formed a wedge blocking the doors to the Hall of Ages, and our friends seemed to be trying to get past them. For a moment, that seemed backward to me. Shouldn't our side be defending the doors? Then I realized what must have happened. The attack on the sealed tunnel had surprised our allies. They'd rushed to help aim us, but by the time they'd got to the doors, the enemies were already inside. Now this lot was keeping our reinforcements from reaching Amos, while our uncle was inside the hall, possibly alone, facing Sarah Jacoby and her elite hit squad. My pulse raced. I charged into battle, flinging spells from Isis's incredibly diverse menu. It felt good to be a goddess again, I must admit, but I had to keep careful track of my energy. If I let Isis have free rein, she would destroy our enemies in seconds, but she would also burn me up in the process. I had to temper her inclination to rend the puny mortals to pieces. I threw my wand like a boomerang and hit a large, bearded magician who was yelling in Russian as he fought sword to sword against Julian. The Russian disappeared in a golden flash. Where he'd been standing, a hamster squeaked in alarm and scurried away. Julian grinned at me. His sword blade was smoking and the turnips of his trousers were on fire, but otherwise he looked all right. "About time," he said. Another magician charged him and we had no further time to chat. Carter waded forward, swinging his flail and crook as if he had trained with them all his life. An enemy magician summoned a rhino, which I thought quite rude considering the tight space we were in. Carter lashed it with his flail and each spike chain became a rope of fire. The rhino crumbled, cut into three pieces and melted into a pile of wax. Our other friends weren't doing too badly either. Felix used an ice spell that I'd never seen before, encasing his enemies in big fluffy snowmen complete with carrot noses and pipes. His army of penguins waddled around him, pecking at enemy magicians and stealing their wands. Alyssa was fighting with another earth elementalist, but this Russian woman was clearly outmatched. She'd probably never faced the power of Jeb before. Each time the Russian summoned a stone creature or tried to throw boulders, her attacks dissolved into rubble. Alyssa snapped her fingers and the floor turned to quicksand under her opponent's feet. The Russian sank up to her shoulders, quite stuck. At the north end of the corridor, Jazz crouched next to Cleo, tending her arm, which had been turned into a sunflower. Cleo had got off better than her opponent, though. At her feet lay a human-sized volume of the novel David Copperfield, which I had a feeling had once been an enemy magician. Carter tells me David Copperfield is a magician. He finds this funny for some reason. Just ignore him. I do. Even our ankle biters had got into the act. Young Shelby had scattered her crayons down the hallway to trip the enemy. Now she was wielding her wand like a tennis racket, running between the legs of adult magicians, swatting them on the bottom and yelling, "Die! Die! Die!" Aren't children adorable? She swatted a large metal warrior, a Shapti, no doubt, and he transformed into a rainbow-coloured pot-bellied pig. If we lived through the day, I had a bad feeling Shelby would want to keep it. Some of the first gnome residents were helping us, but depressingly few. A handful of tottering old magicians and desperate merchants threw talismans and deflected spells. Slowly but surely, we waded toward the doors, where the main wedge of enemies seemed to be focused on a single attacker. When I realized who it was, I was tempted to turn myself into a hamster and scamper away, squeaking. Walt had arrived. He ripped through the enemy line with his bare hands, throwing one rebel magician down the hallway with inhuman strength, touching another and instantly encasing the man in mummy linen. He grabbed the staff of a third rebel and it crumbled to dust. Finally, he swept his hand toward the remaining enemies and they shrank to the size of dolls. Canopic jars, the sort used to bury a mummy's internal organs, sprang up around each of the tiny magicians, sealing them in with lids shaped like animal heads. The poor magicians yelled desperately, banging on the clay containers and wobbling about like a line of very unhappy bowling pins. Walt turned to our friends. "Is everyone all right?" He looked like normal old Walt, tall and muscular, with a confident face, soft brown eyes, and strong hands. But his clothes had changed. He wore jeans, a dark dead-weather T-shirt, and a black leather jacket. Anubis's outfit, sized up to fit Walt's physique. All I had to do was lower my vision into the Duat just a bit, and I saw Anubis standing there in all his usual annoying gorgeousness, both of them occupying the same space.
"Get ready," Walt told our troops. "They've sealed the doors, but I can..."
Then he noticed me and his voice faltered.
"Sadie," he said, "I..."
"Something about opening the doors?" I demanded. He nodded mutely. "Amos is in there," I asked, "fighting Kwai and Jacoby and who knows what else." He nodded again. "Then stop staring at me and open the doors, you annoying boy!" I was talking to both of them. It felt quite natural, and it felt good to let my anger out. I'd deal with those two, that one, whatever he was, later. Right now, my uncle needed me. Walt Anubis had the nerve to smile. He put his hand on the doors. Grey ash spread across the surface. The bronze crumbled to dust.
"After you,"
he told me, and we charged into the Hall of Ages. 18. Death Boy to the Rescue. The good news? Amos wasn't entirely alone. The bad news? His backup was the God of Evil. As we poured into the Hall of Ages, our rescue attempt sputtered to a stop. We hadn't expected to see a deadly aerial ballet with lightning and knives. The normal floating hieroglyphs that filled the room were gone. The holographic curtains on either side of the hall flickered weakly. Some had collapsed altogether. As I'd suspected, an assault team of enemy magicians had locked themselves in here with Amos, but it looked like they were regretting their choice. Hovering mid-air in the center of the hall, Amos was cloaked in the strangest avatar I'd ever seen. A vaguely human form swirled around him, part sandstorm, part fire, rather like the giant Apophis we'd seen upstairs, except a lot happier. The giant red warrior laughed as he fought, spinning a 10-meter black iron staff with careless force. Suspended in his chest, Amos copied the giant's moves, his face beaded with sweat. I couldn't tell if Amos was directing Seth or trying to restrain him, possibly both. Enemy magicians flew circles around him. Kwai was easy to spot, with his bald head and blue robes, darting through the air like one of those martial arts monks who could defy gravity. He shot bolts of red lightning at the Set avatar, but they didn't seem to have much effect. With her spiky black hair and flowing white robes, Sarah Jacoby looked like the schizophrenic Witch of the West, especially as she was surfing about on a storm cloud like a flying carpet. She held two black knives like barbershop razors, which she threw over and over in a horrific juggling act, launching them into the Set avatar, then catching them as they returned to her hands. I'd seen knives like that before, Netjiri blades made from meteoric iron. They were mostly used in funeral ceremonies, but they seemed to work quite well as weapons. With every strike, they disrupted the Avatar's sandy flesh a little more, slowly wearing it down. As I watched her throw her knives, anger clenched inside me like a fist. Some instinct told me that Jacoby had stuck my Russian friend Leonid with those knives before leaving him to die. the other rebels weren't quite as successful with their attacks, but they were certainly persistent. Some blasted Set with gusts of wind or water, others launched Shabdi creatures like giant scorpions and griffins. One fat bloke was pelting Amos with bits of cheese. Honestly, I'm not sure I would have chosen a cheese master for my elite hit squad, but perhaps Sarah Jacoby got peckish during her battles. Set seemed to be enjoying himself. The giant red warrior slammed his iron staff into Kwai's chest and sent him spiraling through the air. He kicked another magician into the holographic curtains of the Roman age, and the poor man collapsed with smoke coming out of his ears, his mind probably overloaded with visions of toga parties. Set thrust his free hand toward the cheese master. The fat magician was swallowed in a sandstorm and began to scream, but just as quickly Set retracted his hand. The storm died. The magician dropped to the floor like a rag doll, unconscious but still alive.
"Ah!" the red warrior bellowed. "Come on, Amos, let me have some fun. I only wanted to strip the flesh from his bones."
Amos's face was tight with concentration. Clearly he was doing his best to control the god, but Set had many other enemies to play with.
"Pull!"
The red god shot lightning at a stone sphinx and blasted it to dust. He laughed insanely and swatted his staff at Sarah Jacoby.
"This is fun, little magicians. Don't you have any more tricks?"
I'm not sure how long we stood in the doorway watching the battle. Probably not more than a few seconds, but it seemed like an eternity. Finally, Jazz choked back a sob.
"Amos, he's possessed again."
"No," I insisted. "No, this is different. He's in control." Our initiates gazed at me with disbelief. I understood their panic. I remembered better than anyone how Set had nearly broken my uncle's sanity. It was hard to comprehend that Amos would ever willingly channel the Red God's power, yet he was doing the impossible. He was winning. Still, even the Chief Lector couldn't channel that much power for long.
"Look at him," I pleaded. "We have to help him. Amos isn't possessed. He's controlling Set."
Walt frowned.
"Sadie, that's impossible. Set can't be controlled."
Carter raised his crook and flail.
"Obviously he can be, because Amos is doing it. Now, are we going to war or what?"
We charged forward, but we'd hesitated too long. Sarah Jacoby had noticed our presence. She yelled down at her followers.
"No!"
She may have been evil, but she was not a fool. Their assault on Amos thus far had simply been to distract him and weaken him. On her cue, the real attack began. Kwai blasted lightning at Amos's face just as the other magicians drew out magic ropes and threw them at the Set avatar. The red warrior staggered as the ropes tightened all at once, lashing around his legs and arms. Sarah Jacoby sheathed her knives and produced a long black lariat. Sailing her storm cloud above the avatar, she deftly lassoed his head and pulled the noose tight. Set roared with outrage, but the avatar began to shrink. Before we could even close the distance, Amos was kneeling on the floor of the Hall of Ages, surrounded by only the thinnest of glowing red shields. Magical ropes now bound him tight. Sarah Jacoby stood behind him, holding the black lasso like a leash. One of her Njiri blades was pressed against Amos's neck.
"Stop!" she commanded us. "This ends now!"
My friends hesitated. The rebel magicians turned and faced us warily. Isis spoke in my mind.
"Regrettable, but we must let him die. He hosts Set, our old enemy."
"That's my uncle," I replied.
"He has been corrupted," Isis said. "He is already gone."
"No!" I yelled. Our connection wavered. You can't share the mind of a god and have a disagreement. To be the eye, you must act in perfect unison. Carter seemed to be having similar trouble with Horus. He summoned the Hawk Warrior avatar, but almost immediately it dissipated and dropped Carter to the floor.
"Come on, Horus," he growled. "We have to help."
Sarah Jacoby's laugh sounded like metal scraped through sand.
"Do you see?"
She pulled tight on the noose around Amos's neck.
This is what comes from the path of the gods. Confusion, chaos. Set himself in the Hall of Ages. Even you misguided fools cannot deny this is wrong. Amos clawed at his throat. He growled in outrage, but it was Set's voice that spoke.
I try to do something nice, and this is my thanks. You should have let me kill them, Amos.
I stepped forward, careful to make no sudden movements.
Jacoby, you don't understand. Amos is channeling Set's power, but he's in control. He could have killed you, but he didn't. Set was a lieutenant of Ra. He's a useful ally, properly managed. Set snorted.
Useful, yes. I don't know about the properly managed business. Let me go, puny magician, so I can crush you.
I glared at my uncle. Set, not helping. Amos's expression changed from anger to concern.
Sadie, he said with his own voice, go, fight Apophis, leave me here.
No, I said, you're the chief lector, we'll fight for the House of Life. I didn't look behind me, but I hoped that my friends would agree, otherwise my last stand would be very, very short. Jacoby sneered.
Your uncle is a servant of Set. You and your brother are sentenced to death. The rest of you lay down your weapons. As your new chief lector, I will give you amnesty. Then we will battle Apophis together.
You're in league with Apophis, I yelled. Jacoby's face turned stony cold.
Treason.
She thrust out her staff.
Hardy!
I raised my wand, but Isis wasn't helping me this time. I was just Sadie Kane, and my defenses were slow. The explosion ripped through my weak shields and threw me backward into a curtain of light. Images from the Age of Gods crackled around me. The founding of the world, the crowning of Osiris, the battle between Set and Horus, like having 60 different movies downloaded into my brain while being electrocuted. The light shattered, and I lay on the floor, dazed. Dazed and drained.
Sadie!
Carter charged toward me, but Quai blasted him with a bolt of red lightning. Carter fell to his knees. I didn't even have the strength to cry out. Jazz ran toward him. Little Shelby yelled, "Stop it! Stop it!" Our other initiates seemed stunned, unable to move.
"Give up," Jacoby said.
I realized she was speaking with words of power, just like the ghost Setna had done. She was using magic to paralyze my friends.
The Canes have brought you nothing but trouble. It's time this ended.
She lifted her Nachiri blade from Amos's throat. Quick as light, she threw it at me. As the blade flew, my mind seemed to speed up. In that millisecond, I understood that Sarah Jacoby wouldn't miss. My end would be as painful as poor Leonid's, who was bleeding to death alone in the outer tunnel. Yet I could do nothing to defend myself. A shadow crossed in front of me. A bare hand snatched the blade out of the air. The meteoric iron turned grey and crumbled. Jacoby's eyes widened. She hastily drew her second knife.
"Who are you?"
she demanded.
"Walt Stone," he said. "Blood of the Pharaohs. And Anubis, god of the dead."
He stepped in front of me, shielding me from my enemies. Maybe my vision was double because I'd cracked my head, but I saw the two of them with equal clarity, both handsome and powerful, both quite angry.
"We speak with one voice," Walt said, "especially on this matter. No one harms Sadie Kane."
He thrust out his hand. The floor split open at Sarah Jacoby's feet, and souls of the dead sprang up like weeds. Skeletal hands, glowing faces, fanged shadows, and winged bar with their claws extended. They swarmed Sarah Jacoby, wrapping her in ghostly linen, and dragged her screaming into the chasm. The floor closed behind her, leaving no trace that she had ever existed. The black noose slackened around Amos's neck, and the voice of Set laughed with delight.
"That's my boy!"
"Shut up, father," Anubis said.
In the Duat, Anubis looked as he always had, with his tousled dark hair and lovely brown eyes, but I'd never seen him filled with such rage. I realized that anyone who dared to hurt me would suffer his full wrath, and Walt wasn't going to hold him back. Jazz helped Carter to his feet. His shirt was burned, but he looked all right. I suppose a blast of lightning wasn't the worst thing that had happened to him lately. Magicians! Carter managed to stand tall and confident, addressing both our initiates and the rebels. We're wasting time. Apophis is above, about to destroy the world. A few brave gods are holding him back for our sakes, for the sake of Egypt and the world of mortals, but they can't do it alone. Jacoby and Quai led you astray. Unbind the chief lector. We have to work together. Quai snarled. Red electricity arced between his fingers. Never. We do not bow to gods. I managed to rise. Listen to my brother, I said. You don't trust the gods. They're already helping us. Meanwhile, Apophis wants us to fight one another. Why do you think your attack was timed for this morning at the same moment Apophis is rising? Quai and Jacoby have sold you out. The enemy is right in front of you. Even the rebel magicians now turned to stare at Quai. The remaining ropes fell away from Amos. Quai sneered. You're too late. His voice hummed with power. His robes turned from blue to blood red. His eyes glowed, his pupils turning to reptilian slits. Even now, my master destroys the old gods, sweeping away the foundations of your world. He will swallow the sun. All of you will die. Amos got to his feet. Red sand swirled around him, but I had no doubt who was in charge now. His white robes shimmered with power. The leopard skin cape of the chief lector gleamed on his shoulders. He held out his staff, and multicolored hieroglyphs filled the air. House of Life, he said, to war! Quai did not give up easily. I suppose that's what happens when the Serpent of Chaos is invading your thoughts and filling you with unlimited rage and magic. Quai sent a chain of red lightning across the room, knocking over most of the other magicians, including his own followers. Isis must have protected me, because the electricity rippled over me with no effect. Amos didn't seem bothered in his swirling red tornado. Walt stumbled, but only briefly. Even Carter, in his weakened state, managed to turn aside the lightning with his pharaoh's crook. The others weren't as lucky. Jazz collapsed, then Julian, then Felix and his squad of penguins. All our initiates and the rebels they'd been fighting crumpled unconscious to the floor. So much for a massive offensive. I summoned the power of Isis. I began to cast a binding charm, but Quai wasn't done with his tricks. He raised his hands and created his own sandstorm. Dozens of whirlwinds spun through the hall, thickening and forming into creatures of sand. Sphinxes, crocodiles, wolves and lions. They attacked in every direction, even pouncing on our defenseless friends. Sadie, Amos warned, protect them! I quickly changed spells, casting hasty shields over our unconscious initiates. Amos blasted the monsters one after the other, but they just kept reforming. Carter summoned his avatar. He charged at Quai, but the red magician blasted him backward with a new surge of lightning. My poor brother slammed into a stone column, which collapsed on top of him. I could only hope his avatar had taken the brunt of the impact. Walt released a dozen magical creatures at once. His sphinx, his camels, his ibis, even Philip of Macedonia. They charged at the sand creatures, trying to keep them away from the fallen magicians. Then Walt turned to face Quai. Anubis, Quai hissed. You should have stayed in your funeral parlor, boy god. You are outmatched. By way of answer, Walt spread his hands. On either side of him, the floor cracked open. Two massive jackals leapt from the crevices, their fangs bared. Walt's form shimmered. Suddenly, he was dressed in Egyptian battle armor, a wasp staff twirling in his hands like a deadly fan blade. Quai roared. He blasted the jackals with waves of sand. He hurled lightning and words of power at Walt, but Walt deflected them with his staff, reducing Kwai's attacks to grey ashes. The jackals harried Kwai from either side, sinking their teeth into his legs, while Walt stepped in and swung his staff like a golf club. He hit Kwai so hard, I imagined it echoed all the way through the Duat. The magician fell. His sand creatures vanished. Walt called off his jackals. Amos lowered his staff. Carter rose from the rubble, looking dizzy but unharmed. We gathered around the fallen magician. Kwai should have been dead. A line of blood trickled from his mouth. His eyes were glassy, but as I studied his face, he took a sharp breath and laughed weakly. "Idiots," he rasped. "Sahay!" A blood-red hieroglyph burned against his chest. His robes erupted in flames. Before our eyes, he dissolved into sand, and a wave of cold, the power of chaos, rippled through the Hall of Ages. Columns shook. Chunks of stone fell from the ceiling. A slab the size of an oven crashed into the steps of the dais, almost crushing the Pharaoh's throne. "Bring down!" I said, realizing what the hieroglyph meant. Even Isis seemed terrified by the invocation. "Sahay is bring down!" Amos swore in ancient Egyptian, something about donkeys trampling Kwai's ghost. "He used up his life force to cast this curse. The hall is already weakened. We'll have to leave before we're buried alive!" I glanced around us at the fallen magicians. Some of our initiates were starting to stir, but there was no way we could get them all to safety in time. "We have to stop it," I insisted. "We have four gods present. Can't we save the hall?" Amos furrowed his brow. "The power of Set will not help me in this. He can only destroy, not restore." Another column toppled. It broke across the floor, barely missing one of the unconscious rebels. Walt, who looked quite good in armor, by the way, shook his head. "This is beyond Anubis. I'm sorry." The floor rumbled. We had only seconds to live. Then we would just be another bunch of entombed Egyptians. "Carter?" I asked. He regarded me helplessly. He was still weak, and I realized his battle magic wouldn't be much good in this situation. I sighed. "So it comes down to me, as always. Fine. You three shield the others as best you can. If this doesn't work, get out quickly." "If what doesn't work?" Amos said, as more chunks of ceiling rained down around us. "Sadie, what are you planning?" "Just a word, dear uncle." I raised my staff and called on the power of Isis. She immediately understood what I needed. Together, we tried to find calm in the chaos. I focused on the most peaceful, well-ordered moments of my life, and there weren't many. I remembered my 6th birthday party in Los Angeles with Carter, my dad and Mum, the last clear memory I had of all of us together as a family. I imagined listening to music in my room at Brooklyn House while Hufu ate Cheerios on my dresser. I imagined sitting on the terrace with my friends, having a restful breakfast as Philip of Macedonia splashed in his pool. I remembered Sunday afternoons at Gran and Gramps' flat, Muffin on my lap, Gramps' rugby game on the telly, and Gran's horrible biscuits and weak tea on the table. Good times those were. Most important, I faced down my own chaos. I accepted my jumbled emotions about whether I belonged in London or New York, whether I was a magician or a schoolgirl. I was Sadie Kane, and if I survived today, I could bloody well balance it all. And yes, I accepted Walt and Anubis. I gave up my anger and dismay. I imagined both of them with me, and if that was peculiar, well then, it fit right in with the rest of my life. I made peace with the idea. Walt was alive. Anubis was flesh and blood. I stilled my restlessness and let go of my doubts. "Mat," I said. I felt as if I'd struck a tuning fork against the foundation of the earth. Deep harmony resonated outward through every level of the Duat. The Hall of Ages stilled. columns rose and repaired themselves, the cracks in the ceiling and floor sealed, holographic curtains of light blazed once again along either side of the hall, and hieroglyphs once more filled the air. I collapsed into Wart's arms. Through my fuzzy vision, I saw him smiling down at me. Anubis, too. I could see them both, and I realized I didn't have to pick.
"Sadie, you did it,"
he said. "You're so amazing." "Uh-huh," I muttered. "Good night." They tell me I was only out a few seconds, but it felt like centuries. When I came to, the other magicians were back on their feet. Amos smiled down at me.
"Up you come, my girl."
He helped me to my feet. Carter hugged me quite enthusiastically, almost as if he appreciated me properly for once.
"It's not over," Carter warned. "We have to get to the surface. Are you ready?"
I nodded, though neither of us was in good shape. We'd used up too much energy in the fight for the Hall of Ages. Even with the gods' help, we were in no condition to face Apophis, but we had little choice.
"Carter," Amos said formally, gesturing to the empty throne, "you are blood of the pharaohs, eye of Horus. You carry the crook and flail bestowed by Ra. The kingship is yours. Will you lead us, gods and mortals, against the enemy?"
Carter stood straight. I could see the doubt and fear in him, but possibly that was just because I knew him. I'd spoken his secret name. On the outside, he looked confident, strong, adult, even kingly. "Yes," I said that. "Don't get a big head, brother dear. You're still a huge dork."
"I'll lead you," Carter said. "But the throne will have to wait. Right now, Ra needs us. We have to get to the surface. Can you show us the quickest way?"
Amos nodded.
"And the rest of you?"
The other magicians shouted assent, even the former rebels.
"We aren't many," Walt observed. "What are your orders, Carter?"
"First, we get reinforcements," he said. "It's time I summoned the gods to war."
19. Welcome to the Funhouse of Evil. Sadie says I looked confident. Good one. Actually, being offered kingship of the universe, or supreme command over gods and magicians or whatever, pretty much had me shaking in my shoes. I was grateful that it had happened as we headed into combat, so I didn't have time to think about it too much or freak out.
"Go with it," Horus said. "Use my courage." For once I was glad to let him take the lead. Otherwise, when we reached the surface and I saw how bad things were, I would have run back inside, screaming like a kindergartner. Sadie says that's not fair. Our kindergartners weren't screaming. They were more anxious for combat than I was. Anyway, our little band of magicians popped out of a secret tunnel halfway up Khafre's pyramid and stared down at the end of the world. To say Apophis was huge would be like saying the Titanic took on a little water. Since we'd been underground, the serpent had grown. Now he coiled under the desert for miles, wrapping around the pyramids and tunneling under the outskirts of Cairo, lifting entire neighborhoods like old carpeting. Only the serpent's head was above ground, but it rose almost as tall as the pyramids. It was formed of sandstorm and lightning, like Sadie described. And when it fanned out its cobra's crest, it displayed a blazing hieroglyph no magician would ever write. Isfet, the sign of chaos. The four gods battling Apophis looked tiny in comparison. Sobek straddled the serpent's back, chomping down again and again with his powerful crocodile jaws and smashing away with his staff. His attacks connected, but they didn't seem to bother Apophis. Bess danced around in his speedo, swinging a wooden club and yelling boo so loudly the people in Cairo were probably cowering under the beds. But the giant chaos snake did not look terrified. Our cat friend, Bast, wasn't having much luck either. She leaped onto the serpent's head and slashed wildly with her knives, then jumped away before Apophis could shake her off, but the serpent only seemed interested in one target. Standing in desert between the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx,
Zia was surrounded in brilliant golden light. It was hard to look directly at her, but she was shooting fireballs like a Roman candle, each one exploding against the serpent's body and disrupting his form. The serpent retaliated, biting chunks out of the desert, but he couldn't seem to find Zia. Her location shifted like a mirage, always several feet away from wherever Apophis struck. Still, she couldn't keep this up forever. Looking into the Duat, I could see the four gods' auras weakening, and Apophis kept getting larger and stronger.
"What do we do?"
Jazz asked nervously. "Wait for my signal," I said.
"Which is what?"
Sadie asked. "I don't know yet. I'll be back." I closed my eyes and sent my Ba into the heavens. Suddenly, I stood in the throne room of the gods. Stone columns soared overhead. Braziers of magical fire stretched into the distance, their light reflecting on the polished marble floor. In the center of the room, Ra's sunboat rested on its dais. His throne of fire sat empty. I seemed to be alone until I called out, "Come to me!" Horus and I spoke in unison. "Fulfill your oath of loyalty!" Trails of glowing smoke drifted into the room like slow-motion comets. Lights blazed to life.